This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Sherry Chesson, also known to her frustration by her married name, Finkbein, loved kids, had four little ones, including a toddler, and a day job spent with more kids on Arizona's NBC affiliate, where she was known by yet another name, Miss Sherry of Romper Room. She was happily pregnant again. The year was 1962.
Romper, bumper, stomper, boom. Tell me, do. Magic mirror, tell me today. Have all my friends had fun at play? Today's a special day.
Early in her pregnancy, brought low by morning sickness, she tried a sedative her husband Bob had brought home from London. The brand name was Distival. The generic name, she learned, was thalidomide. She also learned of the deformities wrought by the drug in Europe. She saw a photograph of five babies without arms or legs, and she felt a ticking time bomb inside of her. She feared for others who might be at risk, so always impulsive, she called her local newspaper.
I was thinking of, oh my God, there had been a contingent of Arizona Army guardsmen over in Germany where the drug was first synthesized. Somebody could have brought it back from there. So I picked up the phone, called the editor of the paper, and he wasn't there, but his wife was. She said, our medical reporter is doing an article on thalidomide. May he call you? And I said, of course, but he won't use my name, will he? She said she wouldn't use my name, and they didn't. Although on Monday morning, page one of the paper, black border around it, baby deforming drug may cost woman her child here. And it went on to say Scottsdale school teacher, and they had four small children. I thought that was narrowing it down quite a bit. We let it go at that, and I went to work, and romper, bumper, stomper, boo. When I got out of doing the show, somebody said, you have an important call, and it was my doctor saying, because of the story in the paper, albeit anonymous, I cannot do the operation because any person could make a citizen's arrest. And I thought, a citizen's arrest? This has nothing to do with anyone. This has to do with my family, my children.
Four children under the age of seven. She asked what office would be responsible for handling a citizen's arrest, and being Sherry, she called to give them an earful, and a young attorney picked up the phone, listened to her righteous indignation, and replied,
I know who you are. I have a four-year-old daughter named Valerie, and I had the flu last week, and every morning from 11 a.m. to 12, we did romper room with you. You're Miss Sherry. And he said, if it comes to your needing a lawyer, I will do anything I can pro bono to help you. That afternoon, when they decided to go into court and file a lawsuit, that brought not only the Arizona press, but the whole damn world down on my shoulders. In Arizona law at the time, an abortion is legal if necessary to save the life of the mother, period. What the attorneys decided to do was to send me to a psychiatrist who would make a declaratory statement on the word life. Did life have to mean physical life and dying on the operating table? Could life be mental illness?
Did you resent that idea, that you had to be shown to have a mental illness of some kind before they would consider an abortion?
Brooke, I didn't resent anyone who would any way, shape, or form help me to avert this kind of a tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, you're grasping at straws. People were telling me to fill a bathtub with gin, and I didn't know if they said drink it or sit in it. Sorry, I have a weird sense of humor.
She would come to need it.
The first psychiatrist was showing me flip cards, and he said, now you say the first thing that comes to your mind. And I thought, oh boy, psychology 101.
Mm-hmm.
He showed me this card of a woman lying in bed, a man standing beside her with his pants either half on or half off. And I gave him all sorts of flippant little answers. What he was going for was some devious, ugly reason I wanted an abortion that had to do with it wasn't my husband's baby. he kept throwing these things at me that had all this sexual connotation. And I said, you know, he was so far off. He not only recommended that I have the termination, but that child services take my four children away because I was unfit mother, and that I further be sterilized. So after that, we had to go to another psychiatrist, and I walked in, and somebody very avuncular, you know, like, hi, Uncle Benny. He said, would you like a donut? And I thought, would I like a donut? I was sitting on the edge of my chair expecting more of the same. And I said, aren't you going to ask me some questions? And he says, oh, no, it's already been recommended to a three-man medical board to okay this abortion. And I may as well have a donut and just wait for some time to pass because he wasn't going to ask me any questions.
She says that doctors in that part of Arizona were already doing about 300 abortions a year. They just didn't call it abortion. They called it D&C, dilation and cuterage.
This one was just going to be another one just like that. But somebody, namely me, opened her mouth and started a landslide.
Her doctor's Catholic associate found out and threatened to expose him, so he had to drop out. The doctor who delivered her last kid refused. Her uncle, who ran a hospital in Denver, promised aid but withdrew it when the news of the story reached there, as it eventually reached across the world. Then Japan was suggested, but fearing anti-Japanese demonstrations, the consulate denied her a visa.
What are your plans after Sweden?
I just want to do what's right for myself. In my family, I don't feel bitter towards anyone. I don't feel bitter towards people who oppose us religiously. I only hope that they could feel some of what's in my heart in trying to prevent a tragedy from happening.
A newspaper in Stockholm agreed to arrange and cover the cost of the abortion in exchange for an exclusive. There, she endured 3 weeks of what she called interrogations in the midst of a media melee, and then it was done.
And then they found out the baby had no arms. I asked, like I'd asked four times before, if the baby were a boy or a girl, and the doctor said, and I've never forgotten that, it was not a baby. It was abnormal growth that never would have been a normal child. And that's the way I helped heal myself. We left Sweden, went to Bob's hometown in Indiana for a week or so, went back to Arizona, found out I had lost my wonderful job by the NBC vice president, and I used to say aptly named Ray Schmucker, but he has since died. He told me I was no longer fit to handle children, and a couple of years later, he had the audacity to call me after he fired me. His daughter was pregnant and wanted to know what we knew about.
He wanted you to help him?
He wanted me to help his daughter to find an abortion. So people are hypocrites. Look at Dick Cheney and how against gays he was until Mary Cheney decided she was a lesbian. And then all of a sudden, you know, because people are people. We're all the same. But everybody's wrapped up in these trappings that make them seem holier than thou, but they're just as weak or just as loving when it comes right down to their own problems.
Do you think your story caught on because you seemed such a middle American every woman, so relatable, so, dare I say it, white?
Maybe I did represent every woman, so to speak. I loved kids. My husband was a teacher, high school teacher. The fact that we were an intact family at the time. And I wasn't trying to get rid of a baby because I didn't have enough money or I wanted to finish my degree or I had enough kids. I wanted that child. If it had to happen to people that would soften the edges for a lot where they're lucky it happened to us, I wanted that child. And that's another thing, that there could be medical reasons for abortion. And they get mixed up with the moral stuff, with the legal stuff.
Do you believe that women should be able to decide whether or not to have a pregnancy for any reason? Or do you think it should be limited to medical things?
I would never question anybody's legal, medical, whatever reason, because that's a private matter. And while I will work my fanny off to get you the right to do whatever you deem is right for your family, you do not have to tell me the reason. You do not have to tell me why. You do not have to justify it.
You're 85 now. You've seen the complete modern history of abortion politics unspool in this country. Has it shifted, or is it the same debate?
In 55 years, it hasn't shifted an inch, in my opinion. And it makes me feel like, oh my God, not this again. I'm saying things to you today at 85 that I said at 30. And I shouldn't say we get nowhere. We got Roe v. Wade. Now we have to fight to protect it. It's just going to, you know, go round and round. In fact, I got a little thing in front of me. It says the wheels on the bus go round and round. And that's the wheels on abortion go round and round and round and round.
Sherry, thank you very, very much.
Well, you're welcome, honey. Just know that you will be helping someone who hears it, because that's always what happens.
The mommies on the bus go shh, 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 shh. The daddies on the bus go shh, 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 shh,
shh. Sherry Chesson, formerly of Romper Room, now a founder of GORP, a group that offers children's books and teachers' guides on such issues as bullying, sexual abuse, and gun safety. She's lived through the era of not talking about abortion at all into the era of talking about it incessantly.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.